Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Local Talk is a show featuring the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts for today, Ursula Rudenberg, and my co-host is Paul Hertz. And we're going to be going over to your neck of the woods, Paul, Nevada. So hi, Paul, and great to have you with us.
Yes, hi, Ursula, and hello to you, our listener.
And we are going over towards Nevada because we're highlighting the Story County Fair coming up in the end of July, and 4-H, the organization that provides the structure for youth who participate in the fair. We'll be talking with some 4-H youth from Gilbert later on in the hour as well.
And this year is a special milestone for Story County 4-H, the 75th anniversary of the first countywide fair. That was back in 1940, held at what is now known as the Story County Fairgrounds in Nevada. With us in the studio are Carolyn and Ralph Manning, who have written a history of Story County 4-H, and even in their retirement from careers in extension, continue to be deeply involved in 4-H and the fair. Welcome, Carolyn and Ralph.
Glad to be here.
It's good to have you with us. And we also have in the studio Melissa McEnany, a current extension employee who works with the young 4-H'ers known as the Clover Kids and is helping to plan this year's fair. Welcome, Melissa.
Good morning.
Carolyn and Ralph, you've researched the history of 4-H in Story County, which has been around for nearly a century. And that article is available on the internet. We'll link to it in our posting of the show on our website. It seems that the location of Iowa State University, then Iowa State College, in this county gave 4-H a running start here.
Well, that's because 4-H is part of Iowa State. And back when 4-H started here in it was actually 1910 that some of the 4-H groups started. But in 1917, they hired an extension staff member, and the 4-H really took off then.
Can you describe how 4-H started?
Well, 4-H really started as a grassroots movement where people realized that young people needed to have practical information. The idea then was that young people were going to go back and farm, they were going to go back and be homemakers, and that they needed those skills to successfully become the kind of farmer that was emerging, but also to be good homemakers. And there was another reason, and that was that they felt that moms and dads on farms needed education. Folks came from lots of different countries and places, and they needed education, and they brought with them customs that they'd used in other places. And some of those customs weren't really what they needed to have in terms of the farming practices of the day. And so they were using the kids to teach mom and dad. And that was an interesting concept through the rural schools.
Supplemental for parental education, to provide a larger system to bring people into this environment and into the farming community?
Oh, that's true. Yes. There was a large concern that one of the factors that caused the health emphasis in 4-H was the fact that so many young people died in the 1800s, middle and late 1800s.
Why did they die?
Oh, all kinds of diseases, typhus, measles. So part of that was because of living practices, and people came from different countries. In some countries, people actually lived with the animals in the country they came from. And so you'd sit down for, your evening meal, and there would be the hog over in the corner, which to me doesn't seem like, a real good idea. But we had practices like that occurred. And so one of the things was to help people begin to understand the necessity for good health. The saying was that if your child lives to be five, he'll probably make it. Hmm. And that's a pretty sobering idea. So that was one of the impetuses to get the education started among families and adults.
I read your history online. It's fascinating. I would recommend it to anybody who's interested in the topic of 4-H. Actually printed out here, and it's about a 30-page document. It's very comprehensive history, and congratulations for putting that together. There's a lot of research. One of the things that you mentioned was that this started with a picnic. How was a picnic like this called? Somebody must have called this picnic. Who was actually the group or the person that felt like this all really does have to happen?
Well, one of the things that happened was that in 1906, our legislature passed a law which provided the basis and the funding for extension to begin. And so people became very interested in forming groups of kids for the purpose of education, and they call the Boys and Girls Clubs. Now, that's not the same as the Boys and Girls Clubs of America that we see today here in Ames and other places. But that was the name of it. And then that was about 1906, and that really grew until about 1914 and 1915 across America. And people became excited about these groups. Well, prior to 1906, people were meeting informally in schools. And out of that came a symbol of three H's as kind of a basis of the club work, the work for educating kids. And then they added the fourth H in 1922.
And the three H's were?
Head, heart, hands. And then they added health in 1922.
I think your question asking about who started it, well, the extension director was hired in 1917. And then after that, a lot of activities did start and form with clubs. And they were mostly county clubs for the livestock, like they'd have a beef club and that. And I think that he probably had a lot to do with getting that picnic off.
Countywide
event. Mm-hmm.
And we keep using the term extension, so let's define that.
The university is a land-grant university.
It's Iowa State.
And there are three phases of it, the academic and the research and the outreach, and that's extension.
Mm-hmm.
And so extension's been a part of Iowa State for a long time.
And so 4-H really came out of Iowa State and that extension part.
And the curriculum for the 4-H program is based out of Iowa State and other colleges across the country where we share curriculum and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But, yes, Iowa State. And a reason why we had such a good source of information is because extension people wrote annual reports. And back in the early days, they had – reports that had lots of pictures and detail about what was happening. And so that helped us a lot in writing the.
Well, it's an astonishing amount of topics that have been assigned to 4-H groups. It's amazing. That's one of the most striking things when you read the history.
Yes, I was wondering about those topics, if you could give a sense of how that breadth of topics has expanded. And also, in different decades, were there topics that were added for particular purposes?
Well, they had basic project areas that pretty well stayed with the program for many years, you know, in the home economics area and through the agriculture college. I'll let one of your other guests talk a little more about what's going on and the changes that they have now to meet the needs of the youth that are here today. But, you know, we were doing home economics things and home furnishings and nutrition and foods and clothing, and that was very basic, where the livestock program was a big program at the Story County Fair. Lots of livestock at the Story County Fair in terms of whether they were beef cattle, dairy cattle, sheep, hogs, and so on.
That's a really good question you ask, and it's also very complicated. But some of the changes came about because of the change in our culture and because of the education that kids were receiving. And one of the problems that people had was that they were concerned, rightfully so, that kids were leaving the farm and going to the urban areas, and they were losing kids to farm the land. And so they wanted to form projects or experiences that kids could have that would be exciting to them where they would stay. It's kind of like a carrot out here to help them grow. Another thing was that 4-H was grassroots. It started in many places all at once across the country, and so it was very innovative in that sense. And you had a lot of people involved in it, and people would bring ideas from different places, and they'd get all excited about some new aspect that we could put into 4-H. And you saw that excitement grow through the years of different kinds of things that it developed. One of those things I might mention would be in the 1950s, C.J. Gauger, who became our state 4-H leader, started a group called the Builders Club Group, a leadership development group of young people to actually carry out projects and events and activities for other kids to develop their leadership. Very successful group. But that came through a man who had this vision of saying, we need to teach leadership development to kids and citizenship.
This also involved trips to Washington, D.C. and to various other parts of the country. So this was more than local.
The Builders Club was really instrumental in getting some of that started. They set some goals. And, I mean, it was amazing to read about all the goals that they set and what they carried out. One of their first goals was to have a 4-H chorus. and they had them come in to be a part of it. They had 55 kids show up to the first one. It ended up being like 75 youth involved in it over the years that they were active, and they sang in lots of places, including the state fair and the on WOI and of course, at the county fair, too.
Well, and they would have sung here, too, you know. So.
Absolutely.
Not just WOI, yeah. They would have sung here also.
Absolutely. Chorus, that's a good example of the range of activities that were going on. Mm-hmm. And I saw that they studied things like house efficiency, and you have a picture of them trying on gas masks and learning how to deal with that during the wars.
That was 4-H'ers giving a presentation, or demonstration, as it was called in those days. Now we call them presentations.
Presentations. And they raised bees. One of the programs I read about, they talked about wearing shoes that were better for your feet. They were discouraging, presumably, girls from wearing high heels, and they were getting bonuses for wearing flat shoes. There's even there was a program where they eradicated rats. They had a contest.
That was a leader in the Roland area gathered up a whole group of young people to set about eradicating rats. Rats were a real problem for farmers. I mean, they destroyed a lot of their grain and that kind of thing. In that time period, they had taught over 1,600 rats they killed, and this one boy had a record of 500, and they had a whole list of methods that they use to get rid of these rats.
Some of them sound a little bit gruesome.
Yes, they do, don't they?
There was a lot of fundraising. The 4-H has been very effective in fundraising various projects. And the thing that I also wanted to ask about, I know we don't have too much time, but one of the areas was there was a picture in your online of the health champions. So presumably there were contests to see who was the most healthy?
Yes, and we had some that went to the state fair and were honored there as the top one.
So that's very interesting, the criteria they must have used to judge somebody's health.
It involved doctors.
It involved the yearly physical.
Yearly physical.
By young people, keeping track of what they eat and do and exercise. And it was just a whole lot of things that went into that health record.
So this huge diversity of topics, which just is endless. I mean, every time you started a new chapter, I was like, oh, my God, they did that too? You know, it was just, what else could they have thought of? And it made me wonder, first of all, were these topics picked by the young people spontaneously, or was every year an agenda created? And second of all, somebody had to teach all these things. Where did all the teachers come from?
Well, one of the answers to that is yes. It was both ways. Mm-hmm. Topics came from ground up and from volunteers, but they also came from the university. So it was kind of this mixing of ideas among local people. And now, in terms of training, we had many volunteers in extension programs, and they went through training process. And volunteers then were taught how to teach. And they were taught how to demonstrate processes to kids. And they were taught how to teach leadership and citizenship and how to teach the fundamentals of raising livestock and bees and other kinds of – well, I think we had one time, 76 or 80 projects. Melissa, when you were in 4-H, I imagine it was probably –
there were quite a few.
80. Well, for each one of these projects, we'd find a volunteer to help lead kids. And, mm-hmm. and so we'd need to train the volunteers.
We'd also have the publications to go along with it that were mm-hmm. the piece that was kind of like their textbook for the, you know, uh-huh. for their project.
Yeah. Very impressive.
And they could choose their project, too. They didn't have to take everything. They could choose.
Well, Melissa McEnany is here with us as well, and you're from the Extension Service. Melissa, you're one of the planners of the 2015 Story County Fair. Is some of that archival material that we're describing here, is it going to be on display?
There's usually... The History Committee has put together some books of all that information. They will be accessible on Sunday afternoon during the 4-H reunion, which starts at 2 p.m. Our extension office is open during the fair as well, and we have access to that. So if somebody wants to come Monday through Wednesday of the fair and look at that information, they just need to stop by and let us know. Thank you.
local talk on KHOI Community Radio.
And we are talking about the Story County Fair and 4-H, which is part of the backbone of the fair. It is the 25th anniversary of the fair. We're here with Carolyn and Ralph Manning from Nevada, who have made a history of the Story County Fair and also 4-H, which is really part of the ISU Extension. How is the anniversary going to be highlighted this year?
With our 75th anniversary this year, we've got a lot of different events planned. I think the big highlight is going to be on Sunday evening. One of our buildings on the fairgrounds is our community building, which is, I think, 75 years old as well and in the process of being renovated. And so they're doing a barbecue, and they're going to really highlight that. Sunday is definitely the day to come to the fair. We've got all free activities for families and inflatables for young kids. The Peterson Farm Brothers from Kansas, who have some pretty neat YouTube videos, are going to be there presenting about what they do and performing, which they were there 2 years ago, and such a highlight for our 4-H'ers. Just a lot of family-friendly activities. So definitely come out all the days, but Sunday's definitely the day to visit.
Mm-hmm. This is a youth fair. It's always been called the Story County Youth Fair. Could one of you talk about what makes that different from many of the other county fairs?
First of all, when the association was incorporated in 1940, they were called the Story County 4-H Fair Association. And the fair was planned then to be a youth fair. It really was, for many years, it was called the Story County 4-H Fair. But a lot of counties in the state have a lot of things like midways, and they have a racetrack, or they have something else, and they have a lot of activities. Story County has never, I think one year they tried having a carnival, and families just didn't want like that, and they had to watch their kids more. They like to have it where they can have the kids enjoy themselves and be all anywhere in the fair they want to be, and they feel safe. But
in former times, the boys used to sleep there in the barns,
yes,
right?
Yes, they did. And actually, you know, where they got the beds from? They got the cots from Iowa State University dormitories. And that's, yes, they did. If you had anything to say more about
it. Oh, talk about hot. The horse barn, they slept in the top of the horse barn, which sat where the present extension office sits in Nevada on 2nd and 8th Street. And, of course, you got all the heat from the horses and the heat from the day, and that heat's all up there in the top of that barn. And so I remember asking one of the young men, who now I suppose is 80 or 84, who slept up there, and his comment was, "It's really, really, really hot." I think he had at least three reallys in there, so I kind of took it. Pretty warm. The young ladies, they didn't.
They weren't allowed.
They weren't allowed.
But they did have adults that supervised them, huh?
So we're talking about the Story County Fair, which started as the 4-H Fair, which is a unique fair because it is youth-oriented and the result of many, many volunteers coming together with a real history of the nurturing of young people in Iowa. We're here with Carolyn and Ralph Manning from Nevada, who have made a history of the Story County Fair and also the 4-H, which is really part of the ISU Extension. We're going to put a link to that on our website. Carolyn, I know that you have to leave in a minute, so we're going to have some music now to give you time to leave. But thank you so much for joining us and for telling us a little, just giving us a taste of what's really a monumental research project on the fair. Any last words before you go?
Well, we hope you can find time to come to the fair and enjoy it.
And it's really a family event.
It's a family event, and 4-H is educational in nature. Kids are all over the world today because of their 4-H experience.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mama says we're back by 11. Guess I can't argue with that. I don't want to waste another minute of this heaven on earth. Maybe 100 degrees outside, but I don't care. I'm hanging with my friends at the county fair. We're up at dawn, headed down to the barn. Can't wait to see all those morning faces. Everybody looks stressed out, worn out, ready to go back to bed. But you crack a smile and make them laugh, and the fun starts over again. dust and heat. They just can't wait for this week to be over. But I just roll my eyes and make a beeline for the barn. Get there just in time for a game of cards. And it's the kettle barn, smelling up that warm breeze. The Ferris wheel going round and round. Everybody's hitching rides over to the truck stop. They can't wait to show. And it's almost corny, calling you as you walk through the midway, eating as many malts as you can. Gonna go clean table.
Welcome back to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm one of your hosts today, Ursula Rudenberg, and I'm here with Paul Hertz. And we're talking about the Story County 4-H and Story County Fair, which is coming up July 25th to 29th.
With us in the studio is Melissa McElhaney of Story County Extension, who works year-round with the Clover Kids, the youngest group of 4-H youth, and Melissa is also helping to plan the fair.
And we have two 4-H'ers here, sisters actually, Lauren and Justine Rosberg from Franklin Happy-Go-Lucky 4-H Club of Gilbert and Ames. Lauren will be a junior and Justine will be a sophomore next year. Welcome to both of you. Thank you for coming to KHOI.
Thank you.
So why don't we start by having you tell us what events you're going to be competing with at the fair?
I'm really looking forward to working with my dog, Mo, and showing my calf. I really enjoy working at the fair, and showing my animals is a good opportunity for leadership and learning how to work with them as well as work with the other people around me. And I'm also looking forward to doing several static exhibits, sewing, food nutrition, lots of baking, and home improvement as well.
Wow, that's a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So tell us about Mo and the calf.
Well, Mo is a Labrador Retriever. He's turning 5. We've been working together for 5 years. Right now we're in the advanced group, so we do a lot of working with jumps and dumbbell. It's really fun, and he gets excited. Sometimes he's lazy, though, and you gotta, like, work around it, but I really enjoy working with him and showing my calf, teaching him to lead, taming him down. It's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. We participate in the Catch-A-Calf Contest at Fair, which is a special program. It's where you the year before fair starts, you have to go out and you catch a calf, like a bucket calf that's running loose in the arena. And then depending on what order people catch the calf, in January when we pick out our calves, they have genetics, same calves that are genetically the same. And then you each have to raise them separately and compete them in the fair. So we're going to complete in that, and we're looking forward to that as well.
What else are you doing?
I also show horses. I have 2 horses. I have 1 POA named Teddy and a paint named Rocky. I show everything from English to Western halter. It's lots of fun, and the environment is great to show in. I also do food nutrition, a bunch of static stuff. Yeah, that's what I do.
POA is Pony of America,
yes.
Which is an Appaloosa breed,
yes.
Which is a little bit smaller. What does he look like?
He is like a gray color, and POAs are actually started in Iowa. So
oh, really?
It's really cool to have the little kids come, and I show them all the horses, and they talk about them. And my brother also has a horse, so they will, I want to go to touch that one, or I want to go see that one. And then it's really fun to watch their lives. Eyes light up when we talk about the horses and they get to see them.
And then what's a horse going to have to do at the fair?
My pony is going to have to show Western mostly, and my paint does trail, English, and there's also some horsemanship.
And when will the horse show be?
There's a horse show almost every day.
Wow.
On Friday, we have English and trail. On Saturday, we have all the Western shows. And I think Sunday night is the games, which is also really fun to watch.
I used to own a POA, too, so I have a special affection for that breed. A very nice breed of horses.
I love him.
Yeah,
he's
very
great.
Very good temperaments. We do have another person in the studio who just arrived. Katie Hodge is here. Katie, you're in 4-H, too?
Yep.
So tell us a little bit about where you're from and what you're going to be doing in the fair.
I'm from Slater, Iowa, and in the county fair, I'm showing my dog and horse, and I'm also doing photography and visual arts.
Tell us about the dog and the horse.
The dog, I'm in the same class as Justine, so we do the same thing, the jump, dumbbell and the jumps, and it's a lot of fun. And
what kind of dog?
I have a border collie.
And what's his name or her name?
Rex.
Rex. And tell us about the photography.
The judging is actually this weekend, and so we just, matter pictures, and we bring them in this weekend, and we'll, find out how our ribbon placing went. And then they'll, present them at county fair and stuff. You can go look at everybody else's pictures.
Do you enjoy doing the photography?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I've definitely learned a ton, and it's really helpful for, family pictures or taking pictures of my friends. And so definitely, I enjoy it.
So it's really a big variety of things you do in the group. Do most of the people in your group do this much variety?
It really depends on the person. A lot of people get really involved in the fair and show everything from hogs to cattle to static exhibits, and there's others that really specialize on one thing, and they really, really get into that one livestock show or one static exhibit, and they're usually really good at it.
Uh-huh. And how often do you meet as a group?
For our club, we meet once a month on average. I don't know about Katie. How often do you guys meet?
Yeah, we're about once a month, too.
Uh-huh. And what do you do when you meet?
We do a lot of games, like leadership opportunities, work as a club, and it's really fun. We talk about what we're going to do the next month, plan activities, community service. It's a lot of good stuff.
And how do you get your training?
We do different workshops, as a club, team building activities to get to know each other, inviting new members, reaching out to other people to, join 4-H. It's really good.
As for training for, animals and such, we have to do that at home. Or for, horses, there's a horse class every Wednesday for younger members. And for dogs,
there's horse class every Tuesday.
There's dogs.
Do you find the classes useful? Do they really make a difference?
They help because your animal is with other animals, and it really helps when fair times come so they don't freak out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. We're here in the studio with...
These are 4-H'ers with me today.
4-H'ers.
Our Clover kids are kindergarten through third grade members.
Okay. So this is straight 4-H.
Yep.
Okay. And we're talking about 4-H because 4-H is really kind of the backbone of the Story County Fair, which is coming up very soon. And it's really a youth-oriented fair. And Melissa McEnany is here, and you're one of the leaders and planners of the fair, and we were just told by the former guest that you were the epitome of talent.
I'm not so sure about that, but...
So how do kids become part of a group in 4-H? And are you able to participate in the fair without being in a group, or...?
So, we've talked about all morning, our fair is strictly a youth fair, so... Our members have to be involved in either 4-H or FFA. So they don't necessarily...
FFA, yes.
FFA used to be known as Future Farmers of America. And I think almost all the school districts, with the exception of Ames and Story County, have a FFA chapter. Members have to be involved in an ag class and then join the FFA organization. For 4-H, we have over 25 clubs in Story County. Members have to be involved in a club in order to exhibit at county fair. Mm-hmm. And to get involved with that, the best way would be to contact the extension office, and we can put you in contact with various 4-H leaders based on children's interests.
Yeah, I was involved for a couple years in 4-H in Nevada. I was actually a member of what was at the time a new club, a town club. Really called it the Nevada Invaders. And I didn't do any of the livestock or other agricultural activities, though. But there's a huge variety of clubs. And I understand if people are wondering why it's called the Franklin Happy-Go-Luckies. And there's different Franklin and Grant and
different townships. Originally,
right.
When 4-H was developing, it was based on township clubs. That's no longer the case, but a lot of our clubs still retain that history and stick with the township name as part of their club name. But we have a lot of youth throughout the county that are involved in town-based clubs. I think in the last few years, some of the neatest things that we've seen are science, technology, and engineering-based clubs. We talked earlier about how we really need to focus on what's the youth's interest in. The big push has been those STEM-based groups. So we have, I think some of the neatest are our First Lego League and First Tech Challenge and Team Neutrino, which is a first robotics club, and that one's based out of here in Ames.
First robotics?
So they actually build a robot and compete in the state and at regional competitions. Mm. So 4-H definitely, though it values the history, and we still see a lot of our members that are involved heavily in livestock in some of those traditional areas,
mm-hmm.
we're growing and trying to get meet the interests of all youth today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, I was in 4-H when I lived in Baltimore, Maryland, and we studied nail care.
Really?
I was 13 at the time, and we thought it was actually kind of funny that we were doing that. But anyway, Lauren, why did you join 4-H?
Well, to start out with, I have to thank my mom for a lot of it, because when I started, I really didn't want to. And she was like,
why
no.
Why didn't you want to?
Because I was a fourth grader, and I didn't really see, like, the point of it and how it would really help me in my future. But she really did. And I definitely have grown from, at first, my fourth grade year being like, I'm not so sure about this, to loving it, loving the environment, loving the people that I'm around and the friends that I can make and the connections that I can make, as well as show all of my animals and livestock in it.
When you say environment, what do you mean?
Well, especially during the fair, I call fair week my Christmas, because I really, it's like the week that I've been waiting for all year. And
so describe it.
It's like, describe the fair,
yeah.
As in, okay, so it's like always a mad rush, because you're trying to go from one place to the other, back and forth. But then you still have time to, like, talk to people, and you make really good relationships, and you have lots of fun. And then also you're hot, and you're tired, and you're sweaty. But then you realize that, like, that one thing that you worked really hard on did really well. And then you're really excited, because that did well. That means you get to go show at the state fair, and you learn so much.
Mm-hmm.
And it's...
Mm-hmm.
It's really great to have that, and I'm really glad that I do.
Being in a competition is a very focusing experience,
mm-hmm.
so it's an accelerated learning process.
Yes.
Yeah. Justine, are you in 4-H because of your sister, or did you have a different story?
Well, at first it was like, okay, Lauren's doing this, so I should try it too. But as I got going, I decided to get more involved and, like, really branch out into the things I enjoyed. Maybe Lauren doesn't enjoy sewing as much, but that's something I'm really passionate about.
Tell us about the sewing. What do you do?
Last year, I made my first quilt, which was a big deal. Like, that was a lot of fun. And I went to State Fair, which was really exciting. And
what did the quilt look like?
It was a Texas two-step. I, like, kind of did my own back and my own front. Followed the pattern for the front, but it was really fun. I had zebra striped on the back, so it matched my room.
Nice.
Yeah, it was good. And there's a lot of cool sewing projects you can do. Like, you can branch out to really hard stuff or really easy things. That's really what I love about 4-H. Like, there's something for everyone. So.
Mm-hmm. And Katie, how about you? How did you end up in 4-H?
Well, I showed an interest in horses when I was younger. And my mom and my dad aren't quite familiar with horses. And so one of my friend's mom suggested we get in 4-H just, like, because once again, like Lauren was talking about, we have horse school every Wednesday night, and that kind of stuff really teaches you. And we also have, like, horseless horse projects that, like, you really can learn about the animal and how to raise them.
What is the horseless horse project?
Horseless horse is, like, obviously you don't need a horse to compete in it. And it's, like, Hippology and Quiz Bowl, which is just information about the horses that you do. And there's also, like, public speaking. And there's some other events, too, that go on there. And it happens in May every
mm-hmm.
year.
Mm-hmm. So how long have you been in 4-H now?
This will be my 9th year, so it's my last year.
Wow, 9 years of 4-H. And when you're walking away from this, what will stand out the most to you?
Probably kind of what Lauren talked about is just like the environment around County Fair. Like, you just have so much fun there, so.
So you guys are a good advertisement for the fair. So, in other words, you're saying it's a lot of fun.
It's really fun.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Melissa, any last words before we go to our next segment?
I think that I really want to thank all of our volunteers because the experiences that these girls have talked about wouldn't be possible without the dedication that our volunteers show to things like horse school. We've got probably 6 at least that come every week and help those individuals.
And who are they?
Some are parents. Some are former 4-H members. Some have been with the horse program for probably 40 years helping make sure that youth today have positive experiences. So,
okay. Well, thank you so much for coming, guys. We really, really appreciate hearing about the fair. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. I would love to keep talking with you guys. And thank you, Lauren and Justine and Katie. And thank you, Melissa McEnany of the Story County Extension, for your work and for your participation this morning. This is the Story County Fair that we're talking about, which is starting on July 25th, a great tradition of cooperation with youth and Iowa State Extension. It's 10 days from now, so that's Saturday. So next week on Wednesday, our reporter here at KHOI, Greta Anderson, will be going into more detail about the fair activities and competitions, so stay tuned for that. And by the way, here's Greta with the weekly segment, Tuning into Agriculture.
Welcome to Tuning into Agriculture, a locally produced segment heard at this time every Wednesday on Local Talk. I'm your host for today, Greta Anderson. As many of us in central Iowa have already discovered, sweet corn season is upon us. The folks from Good Stuff in Grimes are up at their choice spot at the corner of 13th and Duff, and I saw a Black's Farms sweet corn tent on Lincoln Way. My local source of sweet corn, Chuck Brecky, who sells from his family's long-established animal feed store off of Highway 30, has been receiving lots of phone calls from customers. I was just one of many who wanted to know when his first batch was coming in.
Soon. Hopefully by Thursday of this week. My list is long of people to call. This year, with the temperatures being cooler and more wet, I was not able to get in the field as soon, so that delayed it by 4 or 5 days. And then when the temperature dips below 50 degrees at night, the corn doesn't grow. It just basically sits there. So we lost some growing degree days there. Some of my sources will tell me after 87 degrees, the corn also stops too. It just goes into survival mode of the heat and doesn't do much either. But everybody has a little different opinion on that.
So, not only did a cold, wet spring slow the start of Chuck's sweet corn, according to the farmers who chat with him in the store, these intensely hot days we've had recently haven't been helping it to the finish line.
You would think after 2 or 3 days of really hot, the sweet corn should be ready. And when I go out to physically take a few ears to try it, they're still about the same as what they were. They haven't matured as much. So that would appear that it doesn't do as much during the day as you think. Nighttime seems to be when the corn turns more.
As sweet corn growers go, Chuck is lucky. He's got loyal customers who will wait for that call back. Even so, growing vegetables for market, especially crops like corn that are planted in several batches, is a matter of timing, and temperature is a key component. That term that Chuck Brecky dropped,
we lost some growing degree days there,
is a tool farmers use to make sure their harvest is a matter less of guesswork than of calculation. Here's Ajay Nair, Extension Specialist and Assistant Professor of Vegetable Growing at ISU, describing the meaning of growing degree days.
Growing degree days, or heat units, it's also known as heat units, is a tool which growers can use. Even us researchers, we use that to actually schedule our planting, depending on when we want to harvest. So let's say if I'm a grower and I want to provide sweet corn in the month of July and August and even in September multiple times to different locations, I need to know when I should plant or when I should space my plantings so that my harvest is consistent. It sounds very complex with the name and all, but it is not. It's a very simple formula which you use to calculate the growing degree days or the heat units. And these heat units are directly contribute towards the growth of the plant. So the higher the heat units, the growth will be faster. The way you calculate the growing degree day is you take the maximum temperature in a given day, and you add the minimum temperature for that given day. So you add the maximum and the minimum, divide it by 2, and then subtract the temperature, which is the lower threshold for that crop to grow. So you do this for every day, and you keep accumulating that, and based on that, you can predict when are you going to harvest. You can predict when are some of the insects going to come and attack, because their development also depends upon the heat units. Entomologists here at Iowa State and other institutions have calculated the growing degree days at which these insects emerge, or when the larva is there, or when the eggs are there, when the adults come out. So they know when they come, and then they look at historic data, or they have themselves collected data. What was the growing degree day at the time when they all came out? So you can correlate those together and come up with a model where it says when the growing degree days is, let's say, 800 units, that's when we see the moth of the corn earworm flying. So growers, vegetable growers, fruit growers can use this data and kind of predict, okay, this insect is going to come at this time, and so I need to be prepared for this insect, or at least I should scout more so that my crop is not damaged.
Okay, and so there must be some place where a grower can go on the internet that has already calculated the degree day for them for their area. Is that true?
That's true. Iowa State University manages a website called MESONET, M-E-S-O-N-E-T. You can Google it, mesonet.agron.iastate.edu. I think that's what it is, but you can Google MESONET. And this is a network of weather stations throughout the state. There's one at Horticulture Research Station. There's one at Agronomy Farm, at Armstrong, at Muscatine, throughout the state. And these weather stations collect comprehensive data, soil temperature, precipitation, relative humidity, air temperature, and you can download those data. And growing degree day is one of the variables or one of the data which you can obtain from that website.
I followed the links at MESONET and saw yesterday that Ames and Boone were both at 1128 growing degree days, whereas, surprisingly, the Des Moines Airport weather station was 72 growing degree days behind us at 1056. But these heat units were calculated at a base 50. That does not apply to all crops. Here's Ajay again.
Remember, for the corn, sweet corn, we subtracted 50 from this formula, minus 50 at the end. 50 is the lowest threshold at which corn grows. Now, that is not common across all the crops. For example, crops like broccoli, cauliflower, peas, it's at 40. They are cool season crops. So they can still grow when the temperature is 45 or even 40. They will not grow if the temperature is below 40. Similarly, crops such as watermelon, cucumbers, most of the cucurbit crops, their threshold is 55. So below 55, they don't grow. They need 55 to grow. That's the lowest threshold. And crops such as sweet potato, okra, eggplant, their threshold, lower threshold for growth is 60.
So different crops would have different numbers of growing degree days for the same day.
The way you do is, since this is unique to each crop, all you need is the maximum and the minimum temperature. And if you know the lowest threshold at which your crop would grow, you can develop your own growing degree day. So as long as you get the T max, the maximum, and the minimum temperature of that day, average it, subtract the threshold, you get the growing degree days. Since we're talking about sweet corn, most of the cultivars need about 1,300 growing degree days for full maturity. So that's a good number to keep in mind. And the way we will utilize the growing degree day model for our spacing our plantings so that we get a steady supply is by calculating how much are you expecting to harvest, how often will you be harvesting. So if you harvest every 3 days in July, you are looking at 10 harvests, right? Every 3 days, about 31 days, so 10 harvests. So how should I space my plantings in April and May so that I harvest on July 4th, July 7th, July 10th, 13th. And so you need to know how much you want to harvest, how often you want to harvest, and also you need to know the average growing degree day for that month per day. For example, in July, the average growing degree day is about 25. And if I want to harvest my sweet corn every 3 days, then I plant on day one, then I calculate my growing degree days. As soon as I hit 75, I plant my next. As soon as that's done, keep calculating 75. Now, for the month of August, it might be different, but it's not much different, maybe 2 or 3 degree difference.
So the growing degree days kind of accelerate as the year goes on. So if you wanted to harvest every 4 days, that doesn't mean that you plant every 4 days in the spring, because you'll just have an onslaught of crop at one time and it'll sort of peter out.
Exactly. So yeah, it's a very interesting tool. A lot of us know about it, growers know about it, but sometimes it becomes a little difficult to manage all that. Now, there are some experienced and seasoned growers who have kind of mastered that art of correlating the stage of the corn. And they know to get to this stage, it takes about, let's say, 300 growing degree days or 200 growing degree days. And so based on that, they can just look at the crop and say, oh, yeah, it's about 2-3 inches tall. It has about 3 leaves. I should be planting my next.
Chuck Brecky would be one of those seasoned growers. He's been at this since 1979, when he was 10 years old, learning the trade from his grandfather. He took over the business when he was 18. But for inexperienced vegetable growers and growers supplying grocery stores like Hy-Vee and Fairway that need those harvests on time, this tool is an especially important one. And Ajay says these types of growers are increasing in number every year in central Iowa, as row crop farmers or their children decide to diversify a few acres at a time. That's all for tuning in to Agriculture. I've been your host, Greta Anderson, with theme music by Robert Schumann, The Happy Farmer.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We've been talking about Story County 4-H and the Story County Fair. We started the hour with Carolyn and Ralph Manning of Nevada, who discussed the history of 4-H in Story County and their long-term involvement in it.
We then heard from Lauren and Justine Rosberg, students in 4-H, and Katie Hodge. They are going to be competing in the fair for
in
next.
10 days.
In 10
Saturday,
days.
Saturday, July 25th.
And we also heard from Melissa McEnany of Story County Extension, who was with us the whole hour, and she is a leader in 4-H, and she's helping to plan the fair. We've been your hosts today, Ursula Rudenberg and Paul Hertz, and Rebecca Reuter engineered the show. Greta Anderson produced our Tuning Into Agriculture segment on sweet corn.
If you like the show, tell your friends. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. The show, along with links to information and topics discussed on the show and our guests, will be posted on our website, khoifm.org, just as soon as our webmaster, Ron Carson, can get to it. That's khoifm.org.
Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show, so if you'd like to join the team, please join us. Contact us through our website or at 292-2878. That's 292-2878. Or come by our studios at 410 Douglas in the old Ames Pantorium.
As always, your participation as audience and your generous donations are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
See you again at the fair, too.
Thank you.
me back by 11. Guess I can't argue with that. I don't want to waste another minute of this heaven on earth. Maybe 100 degrees outside, but I don't care. I'm hanging with my friends at the county fair. Next morning we're up at dawn, headed down to the barn. Can't wait to see all those morning faces. Everybody looks stressed out, worn out, ready to go back to bed. But you crack a smile, make a laugh, and the fun starts over again. And if those corn dogs that come with ketchup stains on t-shirts, that country music flowing through the air, the boys mean the girls at the dorm and they're up to the demo derby. They can't wait to scream. All the moms complaining about the dust and heat. They just can't wait for this week to be over. But I just roll my eyes and make a beeline for the barn. Get there just in time for a game.